Good morning and welcome to Black Book Talk. This is Patricia Welch, the library lady, and with me is...
Emma Jackson Ford, bookwoman. Good morning.
Okay.
And over here, Reflections Bookstore.
And we are delighted to have as our guest this morning, Felicia Pride, who is the author of The Message, 100 Life Lessons from Hip-Hop's Greatest Songs. Now, those of you who are with us every month have been introduced this month to this book briefly because in August we talked about the book. I mentioned that she was one of the authors that I was really fortunate to see and hear at the Harlem Book Fair. Yes, I'm still talking about the Harlem Book Fair. I'll probably be talking about the Harlem Book Fair into December, but it was a great resource for meeting wonderful authors, and in this case, a great young author, publisher, really a little Renaissance woman. She's really very tiny, but full of energy and doing everything. So, Felicia, welcome to Black Book Talk.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. We want you to talk about The Message, but I think it would be great for our listeners to just meet you. Tell us about you. Tell us about your background, you know, the person that you are and what led you to writing The Message.
Okay. Well, I am a writer, and I'm also a teacher, and I'm also an entrepreneur. I run an organization called Backlist, which is dedicated to harnessing the power of words to uplift individuals in their communities. And I actually got into the book scene during my graduate school studies. I went to Emerson College and pursued a degree in writing and publishing. And it was there that I started Backlist as an online newsletter. It was my way to sort of connect authors, writers, as well as publishing professionals in the African-American literary scene. And since then, I've kind of continued that work on various levels. So that's one of my major interests. But I also am a hip-hop baby and a big hip-hop fan. So it was in writing The Message, it was this idea of sort of combining my two passions, the book publishing world as well as hip-hop, and the idea of writing and reading and the importance of both. And so that's why I decided to do something in book form that combines those loves.
Well, I want to thank you for writing the book. Not only did it give me ideas for presents for my children.
Oh, wonderful.
But it opened up dialogue because a lot of their music I don't listen to. They're kind of forced to listen to my old Marvin Gaye, Aretha Franklin stuff all the time. But I really don't listen to their music. When I asked my son about some of the songs, he went out to his car and brought in all these songs and played them. And he said, I was asking him for something to lead in to the show this morning and lead out. And we were listening to all these different possibilities. And he said, oh, I don't even want to let you take any of them. I just want to go downstairs and listen to them.
But, you know, it's so great to hear stories like that because I like the fact that, like you said, it's opening dialogue between generations. That's wonderful.
Yeah, what I want to understand, what is it about hip-hop? I can't believe that hip-hop in various forms has now been around for 30 years. I think I saw something that was like a 30-year anniversary of hip-hop. I'm looking at the Olympics, and I'm seeing these Chinese moms, you know, middle-aged ladies who are doing a dance routine, and it's a hip-hop dance routine. So right. It's obviously international. Can you tell us what it is about hip-hop that kind of has grabbed a hold of your generation and informed a lot of the things that you do and the way you do them?
Well, definitely. I mean, hip-hop is over 30 years. The official date, according to the Zulu Nation, is 1974. So it'll be 34, 35 next year. And, you know, it was, as I like to tell people, started by young people for young people. I go into schools a lot of times talking to a lot of, especially young black children, and try to reiterate the fact to them that hip-hop was started by children, young people who looked just like them. And it was a voice for people who didn't have a voice. It was a way for people, young people living in an area in the South Bronx that was somewhat dilapidated to be able to express themselves creatively. These young people started something out of nothing. So just in that aspect, for me, it's incredibly motivational. But then when you put the stories to it and see these young people who are telling, you know, narratives that I can relate to, I mentioned in the book that, you know, when I was in school, I was learning about people who were old, white, and dead. I couldn't relate to any of them, but when I would get home and listen to Big Daddy Kane or Slick Rick, they looked like me, and they were saying things that I could relate to. That started to pique my interest into words much more than what I was learning in school at the time. So it was just this idea of, you know, symbols are important. When you see people who look like you doing something and raising their voice, that was big. And for me, it continues just the idea of using hip-hop, you know, at its rawest level as a creative art form, using that art form to raise voices on different levels, whether it's, you know, to raise voices about serious political issues or whether it's just to legitimize your reality as a young person growing up and feeling like, you know, nobody wants to hear what you have to say. So I think it's very powerful, and it affects people on various levels. It was funny because I was reading about Michael Phelps, who's from Maryland, in the Olympics, and how he has this whole soundtrack full of hip-hop music that motivates him while he's swimming. It hits people on various levels, and that's the beauty of it.
Now, some people would think it was strange that young black women are embracing hip-hop, just because there's a segment of hip-hop that seems, well, frankly, misogynistic. And so I'm just wondering, you know, what do you think of that? Do you think it's valid?
I mean, well, young black women and young Latino women were there from the beginning. You know, we were B-girls. We were throwing parties alongside Kool Herc.
Excuse me. What is a B-girl? What is
a B-girl is a break dance. B-girl or B-boy stands for breaking boy or breaking girl. And it's
Thank
for
you.
Break dancing.
Okay.
So there were B-girls who were break dancing. I mean, you can now Google B-girls. There's international B-girl conferences.
Okay.
Girls come together. But we were there for the beginning, so it makes sense that we, you know, embraced it and continue to embrace it. I mean, but the misogynistic question is, you know, hip-hop, the misogyny in hip-hop speaks to the misogyny in larger culture. And one thing that I know a lot of myself and female hip-hoppers are trying to do is trying to change that sort of face in hip-hop. We need to have women in hip-hop embracing hip-hop, but also challenging it. We also need women in hip-hop to usher in more images beyond those that we see on BET, beyond those that we see on MTV, saying you can love hip-hop, but you don't necessarily have to be half-dressed. You don't necessarily have to be, you know, except to be disrespected. So there's a need for women in hip-hop to definitely not only love it, but challenge it, and that's what we do. That's just like the same sort of attitude that, you know, one of my favorite writers, Kim McLaren, says, I love America enough to challenge her. I love hip-hop enough to challenge her. And hip-hop is definitely, you know, if you want to look into an eye on American culture, you can look through hip-hop. It's all there, the violence, the misogyny, the same things that we deal with in American society, we deal with in hip-hop.
You're absolutely correct. Want to make sure that people hear you reading from your work. I think that we read a little bit. I read a little bit last month, but I don't remember exactly what. But is there some passage, introduction or whatever, from your book that you'd like to read from the message so people can hear it in your voice?
Sure. I would love to read from the first entry, which is called Express Yourself. It's based on the song Express Yourself by N.W.A., and it kind of gives a little bit more insight into why I have this connection with hip-hop. And I chose to include an N.W.A. song, and I tell people this all the time, because if a group like N.W.A. could make a meaningful song, anyone can. So all these groups out here say they can't do it, they're lying. So here's just a tidbit. My lingual affair with wordplay, that sounds so deliciously dirty, began as a one-night stand with hip-hop music that morphed into a relationship I never expected. When I was younger, I was infatuated by the witty and often complex rhymes of wordsmiths like Big Daddy Kane and Slick Rick. In a single subject notebook, I would write down the lyrics to the dopest songs and practice the rhymes in the mirror. My fist was my mic. Without realizing it, I was developing a reverence for words. Meanwhile, in school, my teachers praised my writing. Coincidence? This is why I write. N.W.A.'s Express Yourself is what happens when gangsters leave the drugs, violence, and profanity at home and bring themselves, intellect intact, into the studio booth. A young Dr. Dre, an original member of the Compton crew that popularized an entire subgenre of rap music, comes from behind the production boards to tell the world that when you combine a subject and a predicate, a gangster who knows his grammar, and add a tight rhythm, the result might make you think. And I'll just skip a little bit ahead here. Hip-hop not only gave voice to the voiceless, but for this little brown girl, and I didn't know it then, the music was also an early introduction to a new personal narrative, the type that wasn't validated by my school studies. Stories that dripped from the mouths of kids who weren't old, white, or dead. Compton cats, Brooklyn babies, and Bronx brothers were writing from their own perspective. People around the country were listening. Their words, thoughts, and ideas mattered. This was powerful to a little brown girl. This was powerful to many brown boys and girls. skipping ahead a little bit. Hip-hop helped embolden me with a confidence to write from my vantage point with the same audacity exuded by N.W.A. in the opening scenes of the Express Yourself video as they ripped through a full-size paper sign that reads, I have a dream. I've been opened up to write my truth uniquely and in my voice, black female hip-hop. I insert myself into public conversation. I found my mic and I continue to rip it. This is why I write.
Oh.
That's just a little snippet of it. I kind of skipped some parts, but...
Oh, yeah, and you read the whole thing at the event in New York, and, I mean, people applauded. You know, I'm sitting here just saying, oh, you know something, I have to say, I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
Seeing Abiola Adams, seeing all these young women stepping forward, being true wordsmiths, you know, I mean, the talent is there, the commitment is there. It was just such an inspiration to see you and all the other young people, and for somebody who is absolutely not of the hip-hop generation, but really, really curious about it and trying to understand. It just made me want to read more and hear more and see open mic, you know, programs and just see what it is, because this is obviously a very powerful art form.
Yes.
And it's just great to see it expressed in a way that even I could understand.
That's the thing, and I think that's one reason, too, why I wanted to write the book, because hip-hop is one of those things where, you know, we can use it for positive or we can use it for negative. We've seen a lot of people use it for negative causes. So, you know, the opportunity there is also for us to use it in positive ways for our community. So that was one reason why I wanted to write the book as well.
And also, there really is a connection between hip-hop and this generation and others, because when you said Express Yourself by N.W.A., I was about to start humming the original version of that song. Who was that by the...
Yeah, they sampled it in the song.
Exactly. I've heard that. And hip-hop does a lot of sampling. And, oh, gosh, I was watching, I don't know what it was, the BET Awards, and Al Green was the honoree this year.
Oh, yes.
And
to
see
that was
all
amazing.
These young folks who knew all the words to all the songs, and folks were doing all the riffs. I said, hey, you know, there is more in common than we realize.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, just the passing of Isaac Hayes really hit the hip-hop community hard, too.
Yes.
You know, he was big, you know, very, very big, the passing of James Brown. So there's definitely a connection. I mean, that's black music, though.
In the African-American community, music is absolutely connected. But I'm looking over and I'm seeing some faces, and I know some other folks want to get in this conversation. So, OB or Emma?
I was just going to say that Isaac Hayes was the first rapper for me.
I'm thinking of the Last Poets. You know
what I mean? Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, rap has been out here a long time. All right. You worked in publishing?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, what that meant to you, what you learned.
Okay, so after I graduated from Emerson, and I did a lot of internships at Emerson, I worked in book publishing from a marketing standpoint. And I worked at a publisher that did a lot of current affairs and political titles. And it was a great experience for me. And when I had an opportunity, though, to branch out on my own, I did. And I started to do consulting for authors as well as publishers and organizations. So I started doing marketing consulting because that's what I got my undergrad degree in, helping authors promote their work, helping publishers promote their authors' work. And then I gradually got into editorial consulting, just general book consulting. And I still do a level of that through Backlist now.
Can you talk a little bit about your teaching of the life skills class?
Well, sure. Actually, this is a new course that I'll be teaching. I taught when I was in New York at the College of New Rochelle South Bronx campus. I taught a writing course, almost like a freshman comp course. So now that I'm back in Baltimore, I'll be teaching at Howard Community College. And I'll be teaching a developmental writing course and then a life skills course, which is a new course I'll be teaching. So it'll be exciting for me because it's new as well. But I think there's some things I'll be able to learn as well about managing life. So that's gonna be fun.
Howard Community College?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say Baltimore as in Baltimore, Maryland?
Yes, that's where I'm from.
Honey, you're from Baltimore?
Yes.
I missed that. I'm from Baltimore.
Oh, really?
We probably need to take this offline, and you can tell me if you're East Baltimore, West Baltimore, whatever. Maybe.
Well, I live on the east side now. I mean, I grew up in the county. I went to Milford Mill,
yep.
And I went to Towson.
You went to Towson?
Yeah, I went to Towson.
This is my home, girl. I knew I liked you, and now I know why. All right.
I went to Towson. I'm a Towson alum, and now I live in Baltimore City. I purchased a home, and yeah.
You go. Entrepreneurial, literate. I love this. Do you all, somebody else talk. I'm just going to sit here and bask in the glow of Baltimore pride.
Did you want to say anything? Well, I just wanted to thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
And good luck in your new year teaching your new course.
Thank you. Actually, I'm not sure, though, if I want to mention that on the email where I teach. I don't know if I want to do that. I'm just thinking about, I mean, not in the email, in the interview.
Well, we'll see. Well, you know something? You're in Portland. You know, this is going to be heard in the Pacific Northwest, known for being polite. I don't think there's a problem, but, you know, again, we can talk about this off air, and if necessary, we can certainly make that adjustment. But the main, I think we maybe have 3 minutes left. Is there anything in 3 remaining minutes that you would just like to share, just some message you want to leave us out here in the great Pacific Northwest with?
Well, I'm a very big component, of literacy. So I think that it's important for us to find ways, non-traditional ways, to get people reading. And literacy from a broad standpoint, reading, writing, critical thinking, but just to usher in a culture of reading. You know, I hear a lot of people saying, you know, the kids aren't reading. I'm like, but you know what, the adults really aren't reading either. So if there's opportunities for us to have these sort of intergenerational activities or events where we have the whole family reading, I think it's really important. So that's one of my sort of passions and one thing that we try to do through my company, Backlist, and some of our event program. We try to put together non-traditional events to usher in that culture of reading.
Okay.
And actually, people can visit me online at FeliciaPride.com. They can also visit me at TheBacklist.net. And the message is available in bookstores as well as online at online retailers. And if it's not available in your local bookstore, you can always ask for it.
And it's also available in your local library. We have copies in the Multnomah County Library System, so that's another option.
Wonderful. That's great to hear.
Hey, librarians don't mess around. Okay.
That makes me very happy.
Thank you so much, and we wish you continued success. And if you are ever out in the Portland area, you come on down. We'll interview you live in the studio because there's a whole lot more we want to know.
Oh, thank you so much, and let's definitely keep in touch.
All righty.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye.